This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast on episode 240. Wow. For this one, I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I'm joined by Adam Murray. Adam, this is going to be our pillow talk episode where, like, nothing definitive is finished with the NBA Finals. We're in the middle of it as we're speaking. It's a tied series, so it's like it never started. But, you know, we have some things that we can talk about as we float around the NBA world.
Anything is sort of just a waste of an episode because, oh, we could have done an NBA draft preview. We could have done really type of now. It's just, let's just see how things are going.
Yeah, just kind of, it's like that part. It's like when you're driving your car and then you just suddenly stop it because you think something, it sounds funny, but then you open the hood, nothing's wrong, and you keep driving. So that's what this episode's going to be for us. We always have sort of these lighthearted episodes during the regular season because the regular season is sort of a slouch. And I mean, I know that you've made this case a lot that sometimes the playoffs is a slouch where you just kind of like dragging around waiting for these teams to really start hitting on one another in the later rounds, because, you know, like whatever team is playing the Warriors or the Celtics, who are the two finals teams this year, like, you know, they're going to lose. I mean, do you feel that way about the playoffs sometimes, or do you think that we had a little more variety in this case?
No, the playoffs this year have been pretty terrible. And also, just in general, the first round is usually terrible because, especially now with the play-in games, oh, wow, look at this. The 10 seed is playing. It's like, no, they're not any good. And then, oh, it's the 1 versus the 8. Yeah, this is not really
watchable. What do you remember, though, the most, like, when you think back on the years of playoffs? Do you, like, if you're a Wikipedia freak or a Sports Reference freak, you'll look at the playoffs and you'll say, man, the Celtics went 7 games in 2 different rounds. They might go 7 games again in this finals with the Warriors. So you'd think, oh, man, what epic series. Well, the Heat Celtics series went 7 games, and I can only point to one game that was legitimately good. You know, like, what do you look at when you look at some of these playoff games? Do you just remember like the moments or just whether or not it was a well-played game?
No, you just remember who won because whoever's in the championship game, who do they beat to get there? That's about it. I don't, oh, you know, hey, look,
when you look at a team go 7, like, do you think, oh man, that was a struggle for them, or like they worked harder than other teams did?
Like, you could tell, like, you know, let's just go random series. Mavericks, the Heat, like that one. Oh, who do the Mavericks play in the second round? Yeah, who cares? how do the Heat get there? How many games did it go? Yeah, it doesn't matter. All you remember is just Dirk in the finals. You don't think about, oh, in that second round matchup again.
Well,
I do.
I remember all that stuff, but I don't think everybody's like me. You know? I don't think they had that encyclopedic knowledge of the NBA. You have the same. I think you have rabbit ears too, of like for example, I'm pretty sure you remember Andrew Bynum almost killing JJ Barea in that 2011 postseason you were just name dropping. So like sometimes things randomly pop up where you're like, oh yeah, I do remember that. But I do like agree with you, like the totality of it, I think it does come down to just the championship. Like, how did that finals turn out? You know, how do you feel about this one between Golden State and Boston?
Well, it's funny because I have to continually defend my pick, which is highly unpopular here, where I said, yeah, you know, I said Warriors back in April. I said it prior to all the playoffs, prior to everything. I'm like, oh, yeah, the Warriors are going to win.
I think you said Warriors 7 on our show.
I said 6.
You said 6. I said Boston. Well,
I said it could. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you said Boston 7. But it's just like, oh, yeah, it'll be a long series. It's not going to be quick. So after Boston won the first match, it was like, oh, you're going to change your pick. No, you don't change your prediction. You have to stick to what you have. And everyone's like, what do you do? Like, you just kind of stick to your guns.
I got to tell you, though, like, sometimes I think these talking heads have trouble sticking to their guns. Like Zach Lowe is, like, doing the low post. And I love Zach Lowe. I think he's extremely smart. But he's on the court in Boston after that game 3 where the Celtics went on 2-1 where they just physically beat the crap out of the Warriors. And they were just like, it's over. It's over. The Warriors can't figure him out. Their half court offense is terrible. Steph Curry may have gotten injured. And it's like, yeah, but you know, it's so easy to overreact to one game. Maybe some of these writers, they're just not used to seeing games live anymore. And when they do, they're just like impressed by it.
In order to live in the Twitter world that we're in now, you have to have the Twitter mindset where what just happened 5 minutes ago is completely irrelevant. So that was what I had to deal with after game three. Oh, yeah, look at your pick. Your pick's not looking pretty good. All of a sudden, after game four, I'm getting text. Yeah, you're right. The Celtics suck.
Yeah,
it's like I've been telling everybody, like, the entire playoffs have been completely uneven for the Celtics. They cannot put a rhythm together. Like, oh yeah, Golden State could come back and destroy him, which, oh yeah, you know, hey, Steph had a pretty good game, but I'm not gonna be like, oh now I'm on the Celtics bandwagon. It's like, no, yes, I totally want the Celtics to win, but you still have to be realistic.
This is third round in a row where they've lost home games in the series. In fact, I think they lost two in the previous two. Now, obviously, if they lose a second one on the road, they're cooked. They're done. But the thing is that it's hard for me to say. Like, for some of these series, like, I do get a little wishy-washy, a little ADHD, because you see so many different variations of different playoff series. That's why the bubble, I don't think being in a bubble environment really hurt or harmed, like, the result of the series, in my opinion. Do people think it's a cheap win by the Lakers in 2020? Yeah, I guess so, if you want to go into that LeBron slander. But I feel like the series would have worked out no matter what, because it's not the ebbs and flows of a crowd. I do think home crowds can affect certain results at times, especially referees and officiating. But in terms of who won the series, the better team is going to win, Adam. Like, and the way I was feeling is that early in game four of this finals, I was getting that weird sense of, like, Detroit Pistons, LA Lakers in 2004, where it just felt like the Pistons had just had the Lakers figured out. And the Lakers had become single-minded with Shaq and Kobe. And even though Shaq was doing well, Kobe couldn't make a shot. And the Pistons just were a really good team. And a lot of people were making the talking point with the Celtics as they were going through this finals about, wow, you know, Jason Tatum might not be the best player in the league, and he might win. This team might win the championship, and it might be like the dawn of a new trend in all this, where it's a team where it's more of a really good team and not necessarily top heavy. You know, I mean, maybe you could talk me through this, Adam. I don't think that's necessarily like a trend. I think that's just a little bit of, like you said, that Twitter overreaction of like one game, because you feel that way early in game four, like the Celtics are up double digits and then Steph Curry just fucking goes crazy. He starts making a bunch of shots and he finishes up with 43 points and he just drags them to a win. I mean, do you have any like deja vu of any type of playoff series when you're watching this?
No, because every game has been completely, I'll say, independent of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of like there's been no rhythm. There's been nothing carried over from one game to the next. They're all singular one of ones.
There are two threads I notice. Number one, when the Celtics can slow down Golden State into a half court offensive possession, the offense for the Warriors dies. That's one thing that I do notice. The other, though, on the other side, is that when Boston turns it over, they really put themselves in a hole. Those are the two things that I've noticed in almost every game in the finals.
Yeah, and the Warriors have just done the third quarter.
And switching, lot of switching.
They work very well in the halftime adjustment category.
Mm-hmm.
So, but okay, that's the anything else on the finals.
Do you like this whole obsession throughout the playoffs? And we hear it a lot, because when you have switching teams on defense, it means for the layman who's listening, who I really don't know if there's any random person who doesn't watch basketball who tunes into the NBA team, but if so, thank you. But for example, when you switch a lot, it just means like when a guy screens you, the other guy takes on whoever you were covering. So Boston is really, really good at it. And the Golden State Warriors, when they go small, they do it a lot too. But what this new trend is, and I don't think it's like even a new trend, I think coaches talk it up more in press conferences with the writers, and now the writers splurge it out all over the place, is what they call, quote, drop coverage, which is basically that there's so many high ball screens going on with guards and wings to free them up to get 3-point shots and get defenses in rotation, that if you're switching and you know that the guys who are parked at the 3-point line are not good shooters at whatever position they're at, you can basically sag off of them to prevent penetration in the paint. But here's the thing, Adam, this is my gripe about it. I feel like that's always happened. I think the thing that's changed is that the 3-point percentage throughout the league has gone down like substantially over the past year because so many people take threes, and the more threes you take bad ones. And so if you know a team's going to burp up bad threes, you're more likely to sag off. Now, if you sag off too much and Steph Curry gets hot and you can't cool him off, that's when you're in trouble. But like my whole point is that this whole idea of like, oh, this new brilliant idea by the Celtics, it's not new. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you mean the old Rondo defense where just, mm-hmm. Rondo has the ball. That's just, yeah, let's have him beat us. And then, oh, here we go. Absolutely nothing.
Because it's almost like a reaction, a counter to being in rotation. Like, why be in rotation and being forced to have to recover to the open person if you know that the person who's going to get that ball rotated eventually can't make a shot? And so all these teams are based. And so now basically there's these different looks on defense where basically you just leave a guy open because you know that that's not an efficient shot for them. That's the shot you want them to take. It used to be in the mid range, you used to leave a guy open all the time because defensively that's the shot you want to take. You know, twos are less harmful than threes. Now I think people are even playing even more with fire where they're like, I would rather you take a bad three then take a three by one of your best, you know, 3-point shooters. But, you know, I don't even know if that's always the case because we've had some really good 3-point shooters in this playoffs. Like Peyton Pritchard can't make anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then when you just settle for three, and then, you know, it's what he does. It's just he runs up and let me take a running, jumping three. No, that's not good. And you settle for hero ball throughout the whole game when it's just like, maybe you should just settle down and run your set.
The highest percentage 3-point shooter for the Warriors going into this finals was Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson, there are some stretches in the games where he looks like he's dead, where he can't make anything. He does that little lean-in. I think it has to do with the fact that's what I was about to say. He likes to do that little lean-in shot, and he was great at it. The problem is he has such good form that, you know, with his issues with his Achilles, when he gets a little sideways, he doesn't have the ability to adjust and complete the shot with great accuracy the way that he used to now that he has a repaired knee and a repaired Achilles. Like, he needs to almost be wide open to make it.
Yeah, he's... I don't want to say he's sort of moving to that Kyle Korver phase, but at times you can see like, yeah, you just need to sit in the corner and just drain him from there. But okay, now are we good with our NBA Finals talk?
Only one more thing. Jason Tatum, what more does he – like, he's struggled in the finals in terms of his shooting and his points per game output. Like, what can he do to make it better is really the general question.
There's really nothing he can do. You could just – because as – they learned with Miami, they just get in his face now, and you're not getting those shots and you're not getting those chances that you had earlier. So the same thing he did to KD in the Brooklyn series. It's, you know, and you notice that his shots are terrible and going down, but his assists are going way up and getting everyone else involved. So that's what he needs to do. And that's what,
yeah, but there was an elimination game against Milwaukee and he scored 46 and saved them. He scored 23, he scored half of that in game four, whereas Curry scored 43. I think the biggest part of that is that the Golden State has had to settle on a bigger lineup to match up with Robert Williams III and Al Horford being on the court at the same time, which means more Kevon Looney. But if Looney is parked in the paint, that means that you got them in rotation on the 3-point line. And if Tatum's got even a slight opening at three, he's going to take it. And he's just kind of taking bad threes. I think that's really what it's coming down to. Listen, they got Bo Cruz from the movie Hustle, so he's going to lead them to the NBA championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, played by Juan Hernan Gomez, who actually did. I will say that he did play for the Celtics. They had him in his warm-ups. They filmed a scene where Adam Sandler was like the character was talking to him. It's a nice little movie. Like, it's got some good inside details about how the process works in the NBA with a narrative story that has some funny moments and stuff like that. But it felt legitimate watching it. But Juancho Hernan Gomez being like this do-it-all, can't-miss prospect, please.
Well, that's because you know what he is, the same way you know, and all the WrestleMania things with having Zeus be this super, you know, super, no, he's just an actor. But going to Hernan Gomez, he, you know, he did not send, he did not say too many sparkling words on his tenure with the Celtics. He said it was not very good and everyone was selfish and didn't know what they were doing and there was really no organization.
Well, he was so right.
If you, yeah. That's what it was. Because you remember Udoka, Coach Udoka had to go have a – he called everyone out in the media saying how everyone's selfish and doesn't want team ball. It's like, well,
Jaylen Brown said that in a post-game quote about how we need to share more, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then everybody sat down and like said, let's buy into a system, which, you know, he wasn't there for. So the Celtics back in November and December are vastly different than the ones we're seeing now. And, you know, since the All-Star break,
but, Bill Simmons in his book of basketball told a story about that, where he talked to Isaiah Thomas and they called it the secret. And at the end of the day, I think the secret is basically the true greatness of an NBA player is how much better you can make your teammates. That was the quote unquote secret. Here's the thing. Like if the Celtics do win the series, then you can't – people are trying to make this out like, you know, Jason Tatum, I wouldn't even consider him a top five player, and they're going to win the championship. So maybe we're in an age where you don't give up your blue chip guys because you might develop them into stars if you have depth. But the thing – here's the thing. Like, it's like when there's a shot in the air and it's like good coach, bad coach. If it goes in, great play. If it breaks, what a stupid decision. If Steph Curry wins it, then – and he was basically the finals MVP and he was doing everything for the Warriors while everybody else was sagging, then it changes the whole, oh yeah, you need a star. You need a star. Like it, both can work, Adam. That's my point.
No, here's the thing. If Jimmy Butler made that shot, Jimmy Butler 70, mm-hmm. you know, where is he in the top 75? Oh, he's the greatest. Jimmy
and
Butler.
Here's
MVP.
The thing I got to say. We didn't talk about this. He was open on that shot. He was coming to semi-transition and he was open.
It wasn't a bad shot, and most people are like, "Oh yeah, that's he should have taken it." And it didn't. If it went in, that's the series. He's now a legend. We could put him in Springfield, good to go. But he didn't. That's your thing. You know, your argument in a nutshell, almost.
Yeah. You're still standing by Warriors?
I don't change my prediction because why would you flip flop and why would you? You
I still
know,
like Boston.
Oh, it's, yeah. You go down with. The ship. That's why you don't. Stephen A. Smith. Well, I think they're gonna win. No, now I'm changing my mind. No, you pick. Stick to your guns.
I'll never forget when he said after the Jazz won the first two games against the Clippers last year that Donovan Mitchell was the greatest player in franchise history for the Utah Jazz. I wanted to throw something at the TV, but I was in a hotel.
Because it's just Twitter, you know, Twitter brain.
Yeah.
You just this is the same thing as. You know, you have, well, the NBA players now are greater than all the greatest NBA, you know, 75. Why don't we get rid of everyone from the 60s? Because, you know, somebody mediocre now is way better than a legend back then.
Let's stay with Utah. So we can kind of talk about some coaching stuff. We did already bring up things on the tail end of some of our episodes before about Darvin Ham going to the Lakers. Mike Brown is going to be coaching the Kings. The Warriors are going to lose another assistant because Kenny Atkinson is there coaching right now, and he took the job after being offered to be the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. It came down to him and Mike D'Antoni. What you thought of that one?
I would have sworn it would have been D'Antoni based upon since it's Jordan and
I guess he went with offense. Yeah.
But Atkinson, I don't know how he fits with that roster. I don't really know how that roster fits right now. The roster does have gaping holes. Mm-hmm. Their front court is just very, very anemic.
Yeah. When Atkinson took over in Brooklyn, it was weird because they were clearly not in a mindset of like being this like, you know, this like team that was going to like build up and be great. I think they knew that they were going to have trouble with the fact that they didn't have draft picks for a few years, but then they did get good by, you know, swinging a deal for D'Angelo Russell when he was still not a complete waste of space. Joe Harris and Jared Allen, and they got to the playoffs that one year, and then they got Durant and Kyrie Irving. Didn't work because that wasn't the guy they wanted, you know?
Well, he was meant to come in as just, you know, we're going to give you a bunch of just random things.
Like
maybe
Brett
you could
Brown.
Find
Yeah.
Fine. Brett Brown, you know, here's this Caris LeVert coming off two ACL injuries in college. And we're just going to give you random pieces like Dinwiddie. See what you can do with them. See, you can move. And if, and you know, we always mentioned you watch the Brooklyn games. Well, they overachieved. They sure suck, and you knew they're going to lose, but they play hard. They're playing the system.
Yeah.
And they know they'll get better if they do it. So that's sort of the, I assume the mindset Charlotte's going in is, you know, we're going to have somebody who players overachieve for him. But they just had somebody who they fired who the players did that because he improved 10 games every year.
They better get good defensive assistants to go with it, because that was their biggest issue, is that they didn't play defense down the stretch of games. Like, that's the thing that I think will turn them around if they really take a leap. Offensively, they're going to be fine. They were good under James Borrego, so with, you know, LaMelo Ball. And if Miles Bridges comes back, which I think he will. But I was talking about Utah to start off the coaching stuff, because that's been the most recent one. I don't see any other openings happening in the head coaching circles after this. But then again, I said that at the end of the last episode, and bing, bang, boom, Quinn Snyder turns into Quit Snyder.
It was, we want to change up this roster. We want to do massive trades. Well, I kind of don't want that. Okay, who would you like to keep of these group? Who would you like these players? What if we move this piece? Okay, I think I'm done here. And all the players like, what? We liked him. So it was, I think, Danny, I tried to keep him. Yeah, you did. But you also said, I want to make massive changes. I want trades. And so, he was like, probably no.
So this was probably a year in the making. Now, they did have a great year last year with Quinn Snyder coaching them, where they kind of embraced shooting a lot of threes and having a juiced up offense and Rudy Gobert, you know, being like the pillar of the defense. But I was forgetting his name on the last show, but I did my homework this time. It's Dennis Lindsay. When Dennis Lindsay left all of a sudden in the offseason last year, you knew something was up. Like, it was like, you don't have the guy who, that's like if Masai Ujiri built an awesome team and he just suddenly left. It's just weird. And so when that happened with Lindsay leaving Utah, Justin Zanuck comes in, then you hear the report that Danny Ainge, who had retired from Boston, is like within the Jazz organization as like some role. I don't know what the role name is. One way or another, Danny Ainge has got a lot of clout. So if he's in the organization, he's going to have say so. So the Jazz struggle. They don't go far in the playoffs. And then you just start immediately hear the chirping that, you know, Donovan Mitchell's not happy with Rudy Gobert and vice versa with Rudy and Donovan. And then you hear that Danny Ainge is looking for changes. They might want to trade Jordan Clarkson and Bojan Bogdanovic. And then the Quinn Snyder stuff happened. And I think it got buried behind a lot of that drama involving Mitchell and Gobert. But I do think my long, just to finish it, this whole point off, is that I think it was long in the making. I don't think this was spur in the moment for Quinn Snyder.
No, it was just, I'm tired of being blamed for all
and
these things.
And he physically looks worn down. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah, he, I mean, it's like when you're president. Other than Trump. Trump seems to look the same. But every other president, like, by the end of their term, they're just like, ugh. And Quinn Snyder coached there for, I want to say, 8 years, 9 years. So by the end of it, he looked tired. He looked like he was ready to take a break. I wonder if the talk about Greg Popovich maybe stepping away from San Antonio within the next year might have something to do with it, because Quinn Snyder would be a great choice. So I wonder if he's just going to take a year off, maybe do like commentary or something, and then he'll pop back up if Popovich retires.
You never know.
What you think?
That's your conspiracy theory.
I have a lot of conspiracy theories. I can talk more. I could talk about more if you'd like. Like,
no,
how we're going to have a Las Vegas franchise that LeBron's going to own, and he's going to they're going to draft Bronny and he's going to sign there.
Then that's more, it's funny, like, you think that matters. Oh, LeBron's going to sign there. Yeah, he's going to be 39. He's not going to be the player he is now. And even now,
not defensively. Yeah.
You could see the cracks in the armor starting to get a little bit bigger, a little bit brighter, or a little bit, you could see the wear and tear starting to happen.
Don't get me wrong, he's still an offensively efficient player. He's still fantastic. When it's him and Anthony Davis healthy together, that's a hard team to beat.
But he's not the player he was in his Miami era. So, and it's just, yeah, that's what happens with age. You're not going to be, you don't have that explosion anymore. So, okay, yeah, you're going to get a broken down LeBron who is not going to be the 45-minute player and do all these things again. So, okay, like, shit, Kobe fell off a cliff. Well, that's bad choice
of words. Well, Kobe tore his Achilles. Everyone saw that coming.
Yeah, and then, you know, the injuries happen. They pile up. They're more severe. But the you know, the TV deal expires. Yeah, we're going to move two new teams in. Memphis will move to the East. I don't know who else will. Maybe Minnesota? Yeah.
So what you're saying is, like, just to paper it over, is that when they have new revenue after their television contract, the new one kicks in 2024, which will probably be, like, at least double what the value of what it is now. Not only will the cap go up, the league will have more revenue sharing.
Well, who knows?
To basically have the to basically afford to be able to bring in new franchises for new cities. I think I talked on the last show about Pittsburgh and Louisville. I think those would be great choices. I'm sure there's other cities you could think of.
It will be Las Vegas and Seattle, and that's it.
I agree with you. I think that's it. Like, we don't talk about the WNBA a lot, but I think the fact that Seattle had a good WNBA team throughout the stretch after the Sonics left the Thunder, I think that did help a lot. Like, it showed that there was a desire there to have an NBA team, whereas Las Vegas, I mean, the NBA does the summer league there. The All-Star game was there like 15 years ago. It's a hot spot. It's a place where, you know, everyone looks at it as a tourist attraction. New Orleans is a tourist attraction. We're one of the smallest square miles of areas among all the NBA cities. The reason why we have a franchise is because we're able to rack in dollars through the tourist industry. So
it's all the away people.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is they're looking at the residencies. I'm like, oh yeah, they don't really have that many people in that city. Might not be a great market at this point with the league. You just need to find anything. And then you got the Raiders there. There's a hockey team, I believe, in Las Vegas as well as Seattle. I mean, it makes sense. It just makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think it's more the hockey team in Seattle is thriving. So, okay, we have a modern arena for them.
Let me ask you this and just kind of like pivot away. What if we had an LIV situation in the NBA? What if the Kingdom came to LeBron James and said, you know what? We want you to do a tour and we will literally pay you $100 million a year to do it. Do you think that's actually realistic? I mean, I have a whole lot of like talking points I can go to about that, but I mean, I'm making fun of the LIV golf situation with Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson and how they basically took the blood money from Saudi Arabia. But I don't think that's realistic in basketball, because I don't think basketball is as popular of a global sport as soccer and golf. But I mean, what do you think of all that?
I didn't know golf was a popular global sport.
Yes, it is. It's very popular globally. And listen, you travel abroad. You're telling me that you don't see golf courses in Amsterdam?
I don't see golf tournaments. I don't see local golf teams. I don't see, you know.
Well, there's no such thing as local golf teams on the LIV tour. I mean, I didn't watch the event, to be honest with you. But
they have team tournaments as well. There's pairings and they're. So it's one of those, well, who owns it? Yeah, who cares who owns it? Look at the people who own stuff in the NBA. Look at their owners and look at the stuff they're into. Oh, yeah, it's not all clean either. So
yeah, the conservative media has been all over them for the last few years about China. So but
that's a negative. It's just the LIV is, well, we're just going to have. You know, we're going to do a rival thing. And golf's like, oh, you the history of the sport. And everyone's like, yeah, we're going to take the money.
That is something that every company, like the NCAA, used that for fucking 30 years. Every time people were talking about paying players. History. You can't go against history. Until the Supreme Court said, yeah, we can. We just did. So you need to go back and figure this shit out and pay the players. And that's where we are now in college. Yeah.
And then the free-for-all for the NIL deals that really aren't paying off right now, because it's funny watching.
It's getting weird. You're right. I don't think there's all payoffs for this. I saw Johnny Davis do a commercial, which I don't think it would have mattered anyway because he already declared. But, like, there are situations where I've seen some college kids go on there. I saw Duke basketball hired a general manager. That was funny. But, like, yeah, it's now we've monetized it. Now we have completely gone from under the table. to over the table. We've gone from under the table to over the table.
Yeah, and you're hearing, like, you know, football, like, these four-star recruits are getting, like, $200,000 deals and whatnot.
Adam,
you know,
I don't even want to think about the corruption of college football recruits. I don't even want to think about it. It is probably so incredibly rampant. The reason it's not a talking point on social media on any side of the aisle is because we all want our football teams to be better, so we will turn our head away at anything. The only time we point fingers is when there's, like, lopsided corruption for, like, five or six programs where it seems like they're getting everybody like Kentucky does. That's when you start pointing fingers.
No, the problem is it's most of it is in the South where college football is, and as you know, they will do anything to protect their college football. So
yes,
we don't
run it all in the next 10 years in football. So you don't want to rattle those cages if you're a corporate, medium. Like, you're not going to sit here and do a hit piece on the SEC if you have a huge contract with the SEC.
So yeah, it's like, we don't care if Joe Smith Toyota downtown is gonna pay for some kid to sponsor him. It's all overblown.
The Isaiah Wong one's funny. I don't think we have time to talk about it. Basically, there was a Miami guard who basically said, he basically put himself up for auction. He basically said, if I get a bigger pay raise for my NIL deal from the booster who's paying for our team, and put it out there in public, he said, if you pay me more, I'll stay. If you don't, I'll go to the NBA. And the booster was basically like, no, this is the deal that we made. The problem is there is no quote unquote deal. It's a sponsorship because at this point, until they officially change it in federal law, college athletes are not employees. They're independent contract.
Yeah. And that's why he
dropped back and he gave him the money.
And that's why he's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna re-sign with him, it's fine, because, you know, the kids are, well, I'm gonna try, it's free agency, and they're like, no, it's not. And it's just all sort of
Is it wilder than the NBA's free agency?
Well, yeah, because everybody enters the transfer portal, and it's just funny. You have, again, Joe Smith Toyota downtown sponsor, oh, we got this five-star recruit, and look, he transferred out after 1 year because there's no playing time because there are seniors who are still playing in front of him. And it's very hard to be a freshman, you know, straight up QB and in college football or pretty much anywhere. So,
My whole point with college basketball and why I think it's good is this is for the same reason why people ignore it in college football. And this is what I was trying to say. And I don't think clarified it, because all the programs cheat, nobody cares. Whereas in college basketball, if you let these smaller schools be able to get these breadcrumbs of deals for guys and they can do it over the table, then guess what? That makes it more likely that we'll see a St. Peter's and we'll see a team that can make a run because they actually have legitimate talent. The only problem for that is that it can go the other way where let me finish my point. The only other problem for college is that it can create a feeder system with those Division II and smaller schools so that if you have really good players, they'll just spend a year there. And if they have inflated numbers, then they'll take a deal to go to a bigger program for 1 year, then go to the NBA.
That undermines your argument to begin with. How are you? I was trying to stop you, and then you just shot yourself down. It's like, I'm going to launch, and then I'm going to shoot myself down. Yeah, well, that's the point. Oh, well, the tiny schools don't have NIL. They don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars for every player to get when your enrollment and everything is a whole lot smaller.
They have leverage. They have a little bit of leverage.
No, they don't have leverage. That's why all of a sudden some kid does good in the NCAA tournament from tiny school. Oh, he's immediately in the portal. Oh, this kid from South Dakota State. Oh, you know, I'm now in the portal. Now he's at Creighton. Like, it doesn't create a feeder system. All it does is just say, well, I'm going to put my 1 year, like, basically it's the old JUCO route. I'm the three-star recruit. I'm just going to play at this school for 1 year as long as I'm getting minutes.
There's no feeder system in per se among the 30 NBA teams. It feels that way sometimes. It feels like only there's like 10 franchises historically that always get the same people. You want to talk about free agency in the NBA? Just like rumors and stuff going around. I got a few things.
We are over our allotment time for this episode.
Oh, come on now. I can throw Kobe White being on the trade market. That's on the sizzle.
that's not on the sizzles because these teams have nobody else to offer.
The Knicks hiring Jalen Brunson's dad. Very classic Kentucky World Wide West move right there.
Yeah, but it's funny how that's your big target is Jalen Brunson. How far we've fallen from the where we're going to get LeBron. On, and we're going to get Bosh, well, and we're going to get Zion, and we're going to get KD.
Here's the thing.
We get Jalen Brunson.
Here's the thing. The free agency period, in my opinion, when I look at it, it's almost like what the Major League Baseball, they call it the hot stove market. That's what it basically is. Free agency is air quotes because there's so many people who already signed the deals. You got to make it done. You got to get it done through a trade. You know, the draft's going to be coming up in the next week or two, but you're going to hear trades. I mean, you start already hearing those stirring up of rumors like OG Anunoby is unhappy with his role in Toronto. He might want to get traded. I think it's bullshit, but I think what it is, it's wishful thinking by the rival GMs because they want Anunoby.
Yeah, you try to downgrade him so, you know, they'll sell low if we create this rumor. And
That's why you start hearing all this stuff about, oh, nobody wants D'Angelo Russell. Oh, nobody wants Russell Westbrook's deal. The only way Westbrook can get flipped is for John Wall, the Romeo and Juliet of Supermax contracts, John Wall and Russell Westbrook. But, I mean, we could hit the draft really, really quick. Like, so the only thing that's interesting is the fact that the Spurs have 3 first-round picks, which, like, shocked me. Like, do you think that they could do something with that? One of them is a lottery pick.
There are only 7 names in the draft that really matter. So,
are you sure it's 7? You sure it's less than that?
Well, you have the top 3. The top 3 are fairly set at Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith, and Paolo Banchero. Yep. Yes?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And Jaden Ivey will be probably the top guard. Yeah.
Then you got Jaden Ivey. You got the mystery shooter, Shaedon Sharpe. Mm-hmm. You got Keegan Murray, Keegan. And then you have
another Murray, yeah.
And then you have you could go with Johnny Martin Davis. Williams, you could
the big guy,
Benedict Mathurin or AJ Griffin is sort of the 7th.
You absolutely butchered that name. It's Benedict Mathurin.
The guard from Arizona State is
even
on
the birds in the background are laughing at you. yeah, a lot of mystery people: Jalen Duren, Jeremy Sochan, or Sochan. I can't remember which one it is. Jaden Hardy and the other one in the G League who I heard impressed in the combine was Dyson Daniels. So I think he's going to jump up really high. Other ones, like, I don't know. It's hard to say, like EJ Liddell, maybe Tari Eason at LSU.
See, you're picking names there who are going to be in the late first round that nobody
Sometimes I know it sounds who cares, but there are some of those where it's like, man, that one turned out to be a star. Donovan Mitchell went in the teens, didn't he?
You know, he went 13, but yeah. That's the, you know, the Peyton Pritchard, the Kendrick Perkins was 25th. Oh, yeah. During the draft, we don't care about these things. Unless the Spurs package those 3 picks to move into the top 5. What are they going to get? They're going to get assorted first round players who, you know, might do something. They might not, but they're not. It's a very weak draft, so there's
And in the international market, it's really weak too. Like Nikola Jovic from Serbia, he's probably going to be the top foreigner taken. Now the top foreigner next year is going to go number 1. That's Victor Wembanyama. The other one I really like who's in next year is Scoot Henderson. So I think that's going to be a pretty top heavy. I did see this one kid for the under 18. He'll be eligible in 2023. His name is Cam Whitmore. He's going to play at Villanova. He's like 6'7". He's really, really good. So I think 23 is going to be better than this year's. But this year, you never know. Like, is there one player that you've looked at all and you said in highlights, oh, okay, he might be interesting?
Paolo.
Okay, for me, actually, it's a teammate of his, Mark Williams. He's got like the size of Rudy Gobert, but he's better offensively. Defensively, I don't know how good he is. That's the problem.
Way to watch the tape. All right. For Andrew Riesch, I'm Adam Murray.
Take care, guys.